For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Heat Nation, welcome into Believe in Miami Heat. I'm your host, Joey Levin, and guys, we're going to get right into it today. There's no teases, no plugs, because we have a Miami Heat legend joining us on our first show of the offseason. Three-time NBA champion, but most notably to all of you, a member of the 2006 Miami Heat championship team, 20-year NBA vet as a coach and a player, and now jumping into the podcast world with me with his new show, Posecast, which I love. James Posey joins the show. James, thanks for joining us. How's life going as a podcaster?
Thanks for having me. Man, it's going. It's a learning experience, you know, with basketballnews.com. Gave me an opportunity to do the podcast thing, the Posecast, I should say.
Yeah.
And so I'm just learning and just trying to get better, you know?
Oh, I got to imagine, like, so we're just meeting for the first time. So I'll give you a little background on me too. I actually worked in the NBA as a video coordinator and a video scout for about 6 years. So when I was in the league, I couldn't imagine, and obviously when I say in the league, working behind the scenes, not in the league like you, but I couldn't even imagine back then, because I wanted to be a coach, the idea of publicly getting on a microphone and talking about the game, about my experiences and stuff like that. And then I did the switch into media, and it's such a different thing. Like, is it strange for you? Just, I know you could talk hoop all day, but talking to, you know, now it's being recorded and it's a little different. It's got to be a weird experience.
Yeah, it's a little different. Always been camera shy, so I'm breaking the ice of sitting in front of the camera now and talking. And even with that, you know, wasn't always the most vocal guy, but I'm coming out my shell a little bit. So the guys that I had on my show, they've been helping me a lot, you know what I'm saying, as far as the back and forth, the conversation, and, you know, talking about, you know, hoops, like you said. So.
Right.
Like I said, it's on the job training and learning for myself, but I'm having a great time doing so.
Absolutely. And the show's great. For those of you who haven't heard it yet, Posecast, Ray Allen, Antoine Walker, Eddie House. I was just listening to that one today. So Heat Legends also on the show with Pose. So go check it out. It's amazing. But all right, so I want to hit this year's team with you. I want to hit your time in the league. But there is something I wanted to talk about it's a little bit near and dear to my heart about you that I wanted to get your take on before we start talking about the Heat specifically. So when I think James Posey, I think obviously 2006 finals, Miami Heat. I think 3-and-D guy before 3-and-D guy was the thing in the league, right? Like, that wasn't always the name for it, but you were one of those guys. But I also think one of the goats of the high socks, the high knee socks, right? and I'm wondering now when I look, because when I was young, I couldn't really play. But when I played, I wore high socks because I liked them. I thought they were cool. And then in the 2006 finals, I'm watching you and Jet, two of the goats of the high socks. So I started wearing them again during my intramurals. But I wanted to know, like, what's your take on now, guys? There is no more high socks. It's those long compression, compression tights. Pants that guys wear, the tights. What do you think about, they've taken away your socks, man. They eliminated it. It's now the tights.
Well, for me, it was, it started in Denver. And so we had a little losing stretch in Denver. And so our captains, Nick Van Exel and Antonio McDice, they said, man, we gotta shake the funk or whatever. And so they said, we're gonna do a headband and, you know, send high socks or whatever. So we do it for a game, we win. We start winning a couple in a row, then things didn't happen. We stopped winning, and then some guys, they aborted mission. And I said, you know what? You know, I'm gonna stay with it. And then with that, my mom, she would be able to see me when I was in a game. So she knew I was the only one that had the high socks on. Oh. So she knew when I was in the game. And so from that point on, I just continued to wear them, because I'm like, well, if she's watching the game, she'll know when I'm in, you know what I'm saying, when I'm in the game. So I just stuck with it. And I stuck with that and the headband. So that's where my Hot Sox thing story come from.
That's amazing. Because I was actually going, my follow-up was going to be like, was there a reason for it, that like a functionality thing, or if it was just like a good luck or something. So that's a cool story. That's interesting to know. Because I wonder if guys have eliminated it because of the low tops a little bit. So now they wear the tights because there's more low, because back in the day, everyone was wearing high tops. Now they wear low tops a lot more, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you had high tops to me. It wasn't nobody playing. And he's like, I said, he's low top, low cut shoes. Right. So yeah, for myself, it was just, like I said, that's the reason why I had my high socks.
That's amazing. So, all right, let's talk about this NBA finals that just happened. Lakers win, obviously, but the Heat, what an incredible run, right? But mm-hmm. I think Heat fans, obviously, they know your connection to the Heat, right? You played on that 2006 team, so UD is still on the Heat. Chris Quinn's on the mm-hmm. bench. You played for Riley. Spo was an assistant. I think they also know that you were teammates with Rondo, right? And mm-hmm. on that 2008 team. But then they probably don't realize you played for Frank Vogel at the end of your career. Yes. And you were an assistant in Cleveland and won a title with LeBron and JR, and Deion and Jay Crowder were on that team too. You had a ton of connections to this year's NBA Finals. What's it like watching a series like that where you have so many of your boys, former teammates, friends, I'm sure to this day, you're watching them play against each other for an NBA championship?
Well, I mean, it's been amazing to watch. Like I said, just, you know, for the Heat to able to get back to the finals. Out of everything that's been going on, and you look at their roster, they really gave themselves a chance this year, and then coming back to the bubble, you know, really making sure they made an imprint on the games there, and they played hard, and you know, that's a credit to them and what they thought they wanted to get out of the season, and they took advantage of it. To see all the other guys, it was a great to see. You talk about Rondo winning the championship with Rondo, and you know, him being a point guard. And showing his veteran leadership and his IQ along with LeBron James. That right there goes a long way. People don't understand that. So I was happy to see him win. And then, of course, you know, LeBron James, you know, one of the all-time greats. And he's, you know, at it again. You know what I'm saying? I mean, never get tired of seeing him in the finals. And you can never really bet against him. And I can say I didn't bet against him because, you know, or I did better against him because of the Heat. But,
right.
You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, that was a fine line. But it was good to see him there again. And then a lot of the other guys, just their first time experience being on a big stage and also, you know, being able to win. And I just remember that for myself in 06, you know, my first rodeo at the whole playoff series and then just getting to the finals and just wondering how I would perform, you know, in those games. And, you know, to win at the highest level, you know, those memories that you'll never forget. And you look at AD, you know, what he's been through to come back and to win his first chip, you know what I'm saying? That's one that he had cherished. And the other guys just having those opportunities as well.
Yeah, of course. So Spo, I want to talk about Spo. So he was an assistant when you were in Miami. Young Spo, right? Young Spo. Was there anything that stuck out to you as an assistant before he became a head coach that made you think that this guy one day, not only is going to be a good coach, he's going to be one of the best coaches in the NBA championship level coach?
Well, with Spo, he did a great job of preparing us for our games. You know, he did a lot of our scouts, and that's one thing he made sure that we were prepared, and he was always prepared for everything. And I think just, you know, over the course of the years, you know, Riles, of course, seeing him and seeing his growth and seeing that, you know, he's a leader as well. When he stepped down, it was only right to give Spo that opportunity. And now Spo has that opportunity. He's been there. He's been doing a great job. You know, had a few championships under his belt as well. But he's well deserving of it. He's worked hard. He was also doing, you know, some player development at the time too. He spent a lot of time with D Wade. So it was just, you know, just a matter of time. But I think they got the right guy in Spo in doing so.
Yeah, absolutely. You got any young Spo stories? Because, you know, like guys, when they're assistant coaches, they're a little looser. You know, you got when you're front facing, you're the guy in front of the media all the time. You got to be a little more buttoned up. But when you're a young guy, you're a coach, there might be some you might be a little looser. You got anything for me?
Well, it's funny because Spo, he used to like, you know, you can see it on his face and just like his hair, he would just be sweating. He'll be so intense in the game and things like that. And now I see him, he's so cool, calm, and collective. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like, yo, I don't even think he sweats no more.
That's so
but you know, back then as an assistant, you know, he was you know, locked and focused in the game. And like I said, you could tell by his hair. Now I think he sort of took on the Pat Riley look where, you know, every hair is in place, you know what I'm saying? And he still has that, you know, that image of as a coach, you know what I'm saying? Like Rouse.
Yeah, he's like mini Pat. That's why he tabbed him, right?
Right.
This team, right, you mentioned just the youth and just the pieces and the way they ended up putting together. Let's talk. I want to push it forward a tiny bit because I don't know if you saw this. ESPN.com does their like way too early NBA power rankings for next season. Mm-hmm. They put Miami 9th. Can you put Miami fans' minds at ease? That's crazy, right?
Listen, I mean, I guess 9th. I mean, 9th compared to whatever you could. I mean, anything lower than that, but
right.
It's still early. I mean, they had a great run. You have to see what the offseason holds, if there are going to be any major changes for them, or are they stuck with their roster in itself. I think for the young pieces that they had, I think that this was a great experience for themselves. And now it's only going to get better. You know, their confidence is going to grow, and they feel and know that they can compete at a high level. And so now it's just a matter of getting it, or doing it for a second year in a row to try to get back to the promised land.
Do you think playing in the bubble and not getting to experience the playoffs the way it normally is, traveling, playing on the road, and any of that is not necessarily a detriment to the development of these young guys, but it's not really it's great to play in the NBA championship, but it's not the NBA championship as it's going to be for the rest of their career.
Oh, it's the NBA championships because you playing these games. I mean, mm-hmm. The teams that made it, you still had to go out there, you still had to win. And so, like, it is for a championship. So for them, it might have been a good thing where they were just locked in one location. They didn't have to travel. So that could be a good thing where even, you know, you say if you lose a game just as a team, you always banking on going home and winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm, oh, right. We lost on the road. We get back home. Like, we're just supposed to win. You just have that belief and that confidence. So, I mean, next year if things change, you know, to get the full experience of it at that level, you know, it could be taxing, but that's something they should, you know, just prepare themselves for. But I think confident-wise, as far as playing, they have the highest confidence going right now, and they just have to carry it over.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the NBA, you were 18th, right? 18th pick in the draft?
Yes.
Right, so going from a guy who wasn't a top 5, top 10 lottery pick to becoming a three-time NBA champion with your championship with the Cavs as a coach, seeing the way this team was built, right? Jimmy's a late first-rounder. Bam and Tyler are late lottery guys. Everybody, you know, Jay Crowder's a second-round pick. Does it give you more of an appreciation for what they did, this run they did with – they didn't have that these top 5 – top 2, top 3 picks on this team. This was a team put together of, I mean, scrappy guys with something to prove. And obviously Bam and Tyler Hero looked overlooked. They're super talented. But seeing a team like this put together like that, is there more of an appreciation for being a former, like, late first rounder who went on to win multiple championships?
That's a credit to, you know, Spo and Pat Riley, you know, finding the right players for their system and getting the most out of them. And, you know, just playing there, you're going to play hard. You're going to compete. And, you know, you're always going to give yourself that chance to win. And I think just with the group of guys that they have, I think everything matched. You know, they had the toughness, you know what I'm saying? They had the skill guys in the position, you know what I'm saying? So they checked all the boxes for Pat Riley team, or I could say Spo team as well. Just the grind, like, you don't understand just how even the practices are competitive. So now when you get in the game, the games are easier. I mean, they're a little easier. And then when you talk about the talent, where they don't have the true superstar like some teams have, you know, you give Jimmy Butler, you know, give him a lot of credit where he had an opportunity to open more people's eyes as far as his capabilities and what he could do. And then just to do it on both ends of the floor, you know what I'm saying? That speaks volumes of the development that they have down there in Miami.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up that. I mean, it's the culture, right? Heat culture. And I think Heat fans and Heat players have always known about the Heat culture. I think this season in particular, the way they made it to this run that they made, it made Heat culture into sort of a household thing. People now are talking about Heat culture. And I know you talked about on your show, even with Twan and with Eddie House, you guys talked about Heat culture. What? Tell me about Heat culture. Just break it down for me as a guy who went through it, won a championship under Heat culture. Like, what do we need to know about Heat culture from a player?
It's a challenge for every individual, mentally and physically. And this also has to do with a great sacrifice of yourself and then of your teammates to make everything work. Before I get there, you're afraid of it because you don't know really what it is or what to expect. But as years go by, you understand what it is and what it's about. And like I said, between the mental and physical part of it, that's it. You know, as far as not bending or breaking for anything, caring for teammates, and it's about winning and doing it together. And I think this team right here is another example of that. So along the way, like I said, it's sacrifices you have to make, whether it's minutes, your role on the team. And once you understand that and accept your role, it becomes fun and it becomes challenging and you challenge each other. And that's the beauty of it. And you don't get that with a lot of organizations because they're not as strong as the Heat organizations from top to bottom when you look at it.
Yeah, they mentioned, I think on the broadcast, it was Jeff Van Gundy who mentioned, like, you know, organizations around the league, they see teams like the Heat and or the way they're run, or they see teams maybe like San Antonio. I don't know much about the organization. But they see that you can be successful doing things a certain way, Heat culture, but then they don't do it. But you've been with a bunch of organizations. What is it about? I mean, I was with the Grizzlies, which you were there, but I was there at a different time. You were there with Jerry West and Hubie and all those guys. I was there with Chris Wallace and my guy. I mean, look, I love Lionel. Lionel was my first head coach I ever worked for, so that's my guy. But Memphis was a little different when I was there. But and then I was with the Hornets. We all know Hornets have had their struggles over the years. What is it about these organizations? They look at teams and there's a blueprint, obviously. Why don't other organizations want to follow along with a clear blueprint of being successful? Even in the down years, you're not down, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the they want to rush the process in a sense, but then, like I said, having the trust from top to bottom, where you could talk about Mickey Arison, you know what I'm saying? You know, when he brought in Pat Riley, just believing in his vision and sticking with it, you know, not even when things were rough, just not abandoning ship and start from scratch, but actually believing in that vision for a long time. And you brought up San Antonio. I never played in San Antonio, but that's sort of similar. The only other organization I could think of that's sort of like Miami, where they do it by committee and the type of guys that they bring in. So I think that's always key. And you talk about revolving doors as far as, you know, the coaching goes. You know, you don't see that, you know, in Miami. You didn't see it in San Antonio. So actually believing and trusting in the guys that you bring in there and then the overall vision, that's key. And then it's no rush. You know what I'm saying? It's no rush. And people put the emphasis on like a quick turnaround. Well, it doesn't happen like that for everybody unless you got some talent that's just off the charts. You know what I'm saying? And you got to have, you know what I'm saying, a couple of the top 10 players in the league to actually give yourself a chance. But if you're about, you know, the grind and the work ethic and over time, you know, riding to the top, then you give yourself a chance. And that's what those two franchises have done, the Heat and the Spurs.
Yeah, and I think also they both, just from a talent evaluation standpoint, not just going out, like you said, and getting multiple stars, but finding those guys, knowing how to evaluate the guys that fit the culture and what you're doing as a team. Like this year, it's whether it's Duncan Robinson or Kendrick Nunn or Tyler Hero with the 13th pick. And then, you know, even in 2006, going to the Eastern Conference Finals, losing in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then going out and getting you, Twan, Jason Williams, Gary, like just knowing the guys that you can bring in to fit that culture. I mean, as an assistant coach now, having been an assistant coach for a few years and working in Cleveland, it's pretty tough to evaluate. Is it tough, do you think, to evaluate the right type of player and person for a certain culture?
Well, I mean, if you're there long enough to establish that culture, then you know it shouldn't be that hard. And you know, like you just said, most teams or organizations they don't allow that window. You know, it's, you know, you give it 3 to 4 years, if that, and then they're on to something else or the new best thing, where, you know, those teams like the Heat and the Spurs, they're always there. You're always talking about them because of what they put out there on the floor and how they go about it.
Yeah, for sure. So I mentioned 2006. So let's take it back. Let's take it back a little bit. Let's reminisce a little bit. So actually, I want to start with the trade, right? So that offseason, after the 2004-2005 season, you get traded in that big trade. I think it was mainly for it was a bunch of pieces moving around for after listening to the show with you and Antoine.
It was 16 players.
Something like it was like the biggest trade in NBA history. You end up in Miami with Antoine Walker, Jason Williams. I think you sort of alluded to this on your show, but talk about it. You saw the Heat the year before, right? Go to the Eastern Conference Finals, lose in 7 games. You guys all get brought in. Is your immediate thought like, oh, we're winning a championship this year? We're coming here to win a championship.
Well, it wasn't, you know, like I didn't really know what to think at the time if we're going to win, but they brought us in to finish to get the job done. And so, like I said, being included in that trade, it was me and Jay Will. We came from Memphis, and then Antoine Walker, you know what I'm saying? And then you really don't know about any other pieces. And then, you know, you get Gary Payton in and things like that. So it was a lot of player movement, but we got there. But like I said, even then, it was like one of those things where they brought us there believing that we can win or help them win a championship. And so, you know, not knowing, like I said, it was my first rodeo period just as far as just advancing in the playoffs, where in Memphis, we had been to the playoffs those 2 years, but we got swept, you know what I'm saying? Right. So, you know, that's a crazy experience. But to actually play for something, that whole season was totally different. And so the guys that was in that trade that landed in Miami, you pretty much knew that you were there to win it all. It was just a matter of doing so.
Did you and Antoine know each other? Like, were you guys boys before the trade? Because in the conversation you had, it made it seem like, was it just you guys connected by being traded at the same time? Because you talked about how, like, that first night you guys went out after the press conference, and then you guys were having a drink and then realized, oh, damn, we got to do the body fat thing. Like,
yeah.
So it seemed like you guys were pretty close that year.
Well, I knew Twan from afar. They used to have in the off season in Chicago. He had this little charity thing that he put on, and I used to, you know, partake in the games and things like that. The charity work that he was doing in Chicago, and so we just, you know, we would speak and it'd be small talk then. So we just knew of each other a little bit, but our relationship grew once we got to Miami, and. You know, we had a great time down there. But like I said, that first night after the after the press conference, it was crazy, because it was, like I said, it was the start of that Heat culture that we dreaded and that we knew nothing about. So right then and there, we were like, oh shit, like, oh man, like, what do we get ourselves into? But I mean, we were happy and excited at the same time, and that's where the change started.
Yeah, and he said, listen, everybody, go listen to this interview because it's amazing. But he said you guys put Miami on the map in terms of athletes going out and getting after it. Because he said before you and he said you two were the ones, right? He said before you guys, it wasn't really like athletes out in Miami was always a party town, but it wasn't really like athletes out there like that. He said you guys put Miami on the map for that.
Well, without throwing other guys up under the bus at the time. So since it was our conversation, so yeah, it was me and Twan. But it was one of those things where even before I got there, I would say, man, how can they play down here? Like, it's so much, you know what I'm saying? Nightlife, everything's going on. Like, how can you do that and focus and play? And man, but
the South Beach flu, right? The South Beach flu.
Oh, yeah. And so we was able to be ourselves, even though Rouse, you know, he wasn't a big fan of it for the most part, but I think it helped keep our sanity a little bit. And I don't think we abused the situation. So when you say we were out, you know what I'm saying, at the clubs or whatever, like, you know, we did that. But at the end of the day, we also knew we had to perform, you know, game night, and we knew why we were there, you know, and that was to win a championship, you know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of doing it. So, you know, I'm glad we did win it, because if not, then people are like, yeah, because they ass was in the club all the time when they was doing this. So
right, exactly.
I'm happy it worked out in our favor.
What was your first meeting with Pat Riley like? Do you remember?
I mean, it was when we had our press conference, really, and, you know, you just hear stories from afar, and to actually be in his presence, it sort of gives you chills a little bit, like, oh, man. And, you know, how the aura around Pat Riley, you know, being a god or whatever like that, it's like, man, like, one, he speaks highly of me to think I could help him win a championship. So that was my first take, like, man, he brought me in, you know what I'm saying, thinking I could help. And then, you know, just his preparation, because he was still, you know, so he was present. He wasn't even our coach. It was Stan Van Gundy.
Yep.
So you still, you know, you feel it, you know, you just feel his presence. And so, it was, you know, a handshake, a welcome, and it's time to get to business. And that was pretty much all he pretty much said. And then that was it.
Yeah, you might, like, you feel it. That's all he has to say is it's time to get to business. Let's do this. He seems cool. Like, obviously, he's about his business and all that. But, like, you even mentioned on the you mentioned how in 2006 he was partying with you guys after you won the title. He seems like he's about his business, but when it's time to, you know, when it's time to kick back, Riles is a pretty cool dude.
Yeah, I mean, you just see him, and when you see pictures of him, I mean, he's just about his business. He's always locked in and focused. And I think, I mean, with anybody, you went at the highest level, and for him to, you know, come from LA then come to Miami and win, then, like, that's the best feeling in the world. And for him, you're gonna celebrate, and that's what you, like, you had a chance to win, you better enjoy it and celebrate it, because it's hard to do. And I think for him, it was one of those, like, you know, he did it with another organization. It was our first championship, so he's gonna live it up. And that's, I mean, he has that side. And I think just even watch him now over the course of the years, he's still locked in, but I think he's loosened up a little bit, because you see images of him, you know what I'm saying, in the bubble up top, you know, just high-fiving it. Yeah. It's more smiles on his face, where back then he really, like, he didn't smile that much. Like, he might have been smiling in the inside, but you never really saw him just smiling and just like he was enjoying the whole process, in a sense, because he's always just so locked in, and he know what it's about at the end of the day, and it's about winning.
I know you said there was times where you would say what's up to him and he wouldn't even say what's up back. Like, I when I was in college, I worked for a head coach, Leonard Hamilton, at Florida State, who did the same thing, because he was so locked in all the time. He'd like, what's up, coach? And he'd just keep walking. But it wasn't because it was a disrespect thing, because, like, once you were in his circle, they loved you. But there was just something about the locked in, the focus, the minds are all over the place. Like, they're just like, they might not have even heard you.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, because we were on the road, and like I said, we were in the elevator. He was on there, and so I got on. So I'm getting on, like, you know, good morning, coach, what's up? And he just didn't say anything to me. And so, you know, like I said, we're probably like on the, like, 10th floor or something, you know what I'm saying? But we're going down, and he didn't say anything. He just, you know, he was looking straight ahead like this. And we got to the bottom, to the lobby. We got on the bus, went to practice, and that was it. And then you figure out, like, later on that day, you know, after everything, it's like, what's up, Pose? I'm like, shit, Riles, I just spoke to you early this morning. You ain't want to speak to me. I thought I did something, you know what I'm saying? But that was just Riles. He was always locked in, and that was just something that you knew about him. Like, it was about business.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you get there, you obviously were aware of what the Heat did the year before, and you saw, I mean, everybody – D Wade was an all-star in his second year in that Eastern Conference Finals run. Then you get to Miami. How quickly did you realize what he could become in this league when you played with him, when you practiced with him, when you played with him in games that year in Miami?
Well, I mean, you could tell the season, like, how that season ended for him and for the Heat, that they were hungry for this next season to start. And that's how he approached practice. And like I said, it was more like he was more locked in, more focused, and he was just waiting for that another opportunity. And I seen him countless hours in the gym with Spo, you know what I'm saying, before practice, after practice. And he actually just put in that time and that grind of working on his game. And so just as the season went on, I mean, it wasn't a surprise, but it was like I was a big fan as well. Like, man, look, this D-Wade, he killing. Like, you know, he's doing it however you want to. And just think, at the time, he wasn't even a big three-point shooter. So he was doing everything, getting to the basket. He had a nice mid-range game, little bank shot off the glass. And he just could do it all. Very athletic. You know, he dunking and finishing on people. And so it was like, wow. And you know, during that season, you know, we weathered the storm. We get to the finals on the biggest stage, and that's what he's been waiting for, too. I mean, we rode his coattail. You know, he had a phenomenal, like, series and run, and nobody could stop him. Like, nobody could stop him.
Yeah, and before we talk, I want to get to that series next, the 2006 finals. But what was it like coaching him for a cup of coffee in Cleveland, coming full circle like that?
it was...
It had to be a weird year.
Of course, it was weird because now I'm on the other side. You know what I'm saying? I'm not his teammate. Now I'm coaching him. I'm trying to help him. But at that time, you know, he's already a vet, you know, and most vets are already stuck in their ways. They understand the process and what it's going to take. It wasn't tough for the most part, but it was just like managing that. And it was another opportunity for him and Brown to play together and to try to win a championship in Cleveland. And then things just didn't happen that way. And of course, the business side took over everything where, you know, he wasn't there no more.
Yeah, of course. So, all right. So 2006 finals, you guys go down 2-0. What's the conversations that are being had with it amongst you guys, amongst the coaches to you guys as players, like down 2-0 in the finals that sparked, you know, reel off four straight and win a title? That's kind of unheard of at the time. Going down 2-0 and coming back and winning four in a row is pretty incredible.
Well, actually, it wasn't even a lot of talking. It was a lot of, you know, second guessing yourself and your abilities and things like that, and just being in shock, like, man, we get here and we down 0-2. So amongst ourselves, it wasn't too much talking, but we did have great leadership presence, and that was in Shaq and Rouse. You know, they never wavered. They kept everything positive, kept, you know, saying working, you know, we got to work hard. You know, we're doing it by committee, and we just have to win the next game. And that was, you know, once we left Dallas, that was pretty much the message. We just got to win the next game. We're going home, just win the next game. And then with that, it was like before we even got on the plane and landed back in Miami, you know, it's disrespectful to hear that they're playing in a parade. And I think a lot of guys took that like to heart, like, oh, y'all just gonna, you know, count us out like that? Like, okay, well, you know, that add more fuel to the fire. And so when we get back to Miami, and like I said, that's the difference of, you know, you talk about the bubble now where you 0-2 on the road and we like, man, let's get home. I know we gonna win one. Like, you know what I'm saying? You just get that confidence. And that confidence along with that sense of urgency. And so that's what we had. And then once we got the first win, it's like, okay, well, we're not gonna get swept. So now whatever we did this game, we gotta do it, you know, 10 times harder for the next game. And that's what we did. And then you tied 2-2. Now it's a different ball game. Mm-hmm. And then now we take the lead. Now we go 3-2. Now we're feeling real good about ourselves. You know what I'm saying? It was one of those things where even Shaq and Rouse, they didn't let us get too high. Even when we tied it up and went ahead, you know, still, you know, because, you know, the same thing could happen. We still had to go back to Dallas. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, just take care of our business. But for us, man, we actually took advantage of that, those wins at home, and then our confidence was off the chain, and it was like, we right here, so let's go get it. And that's what we did. We locked in, and we was able to go back to Dallas and win it all.
Yeah, I was, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to someone you know well who says hello, Tony Fiorentino, earlier today.
All right.
And
say hello.
Yeah, coach is coming on the show next week, so I'll tell him you say hello. But he, you know, we were talking about, I mentioned you were coming on and we were talking a little bit about that 2006 team. And he reminded me about game six, about 3:30 left in the game. Dallas cuts the lead to 3. D Wade, elbow pick and roll. They're doubling him. He hits you in the corner for that corner 3 to go up 6. And that kind of, it didn't necessarily seal it, because then they cut it to 2. And then you came back and had another bucket off the bounce floater, which is not that you can't do it, but that's not really what you were known for, right? So and then you put Miami up by 4. So you had 5 straight points, huge buckets in crunch time. You know, I think people in the lore of Miami Heat, everybody always remembers the Ray Allen shot, right? Because it tied up the series. They go up and win, but that's a closeout game with 3 minutes left in the game. What's going through your mind? And plus, not to mention, not that Dirk is any kind of athlete, but you got a 7-footer closing out to you from the block on that shot. What's going through your mind in a situation like that? Because not everybody's built for that.
Well, the crazy thing about it, everybody was probably throwing stuff at the TV at the time because I couldn't make the whole, like, I couldn't make. And you know what I'm saying? So, of course, as a player, you know, it's in your head like, man, I can't make. So you start feeling some type of way. And then that situation, you had D-Wade coming off a pick and roll, middle pick and roll, get to the elbow. And, you know, he's very capable of making that shot, but it was the trust that he had in me to pass me the ball again. And I was able to make. And for me, it was just, you know, locking into the fundamentals of my shot. And, you know, just still believing I can make it with just a little doubt. But, you know, at the time, it went back to the basics for me and I was able to knock it down. And that's why when you see it, that's why I hold my follow through and I point all the way down because I was like, whew, I finally made one. And, you know, if you look at the time of the game, it was like it was perfect timing for that. Mm-hmm. And then with the floater, it was almost like one of those, I got caught with the ball in a bad situation. So I drive and I knew Shaq's there, but I'm saying, let me just put it on the rim. And so I shot a little floater there too.
Hoping if you miss it, he'll go get it, right?
Yeah, so I wouldn't make it. Like you said, that floater went my game, but I was hoping just to get it on the rim, and I knew Big Fella was down there to clean it up. And then it's crazy because even before, like we could have sealed it a little earlier, I think D-Wade was at the free throw line,
mm-hmm.
and he missed the free
one.
Throw.
Yeah.
Yep, and me and Udonis, we both grabbed the rebound, and we got called for traveling. So if we didn't have that, we'd have had another possession, and then you know we probably would have scored. But those three plays right there just stick out, you know, for different meanings.
Yeah, the crazy thing about that game, and I think it kind of speaks to the Heat culture, right? We talked about it, is with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter of that game, with the chance to close it out, you guys are tied. And mm-hmm. in those last 6 minutes, you guys score 16 points. You only win by three, but you and UD scored 9 of the last 16 points, and you're the only two players on the team to make a field goal. D-Wade had 7 points at the line, but you two were the ones who were hitting shots. He was scoring at the line. I think that sort of speaks to the way, you know, the trust and the culture that you guys built, that in a situation like that, for the first championship in franchise history, it's not D-Wade, it's not Shaq, it's James Posey and Udonis Haslem making the biggest shots.
Well, I didn't even know that, but that just goes from the guys' work ethic and the trust that we built all season long and the guys putting in the work, you know, individually on their craft. And so, like I said, the trust, you know, with D-Wade making that pass, even knowing I was struggling, but he still trusted me enough that I could make the shot, and he passed me the ball. And then, of course, UD, you know what I'm saying, his big-time shots, you know what I'm saying? And you got to think about down the stretch defensively. We bunkered down defensively, and Alonzo, Zoe, he had, you know, some great blocks. You know, he was there weak side helping, things like that. And you know, it was just, I mean, a great team effort, but that was the grit and the grind of just the culture of the Heat.
Yeah, this is just unbelievable. The best season in franchise history, regardless of what you think about those other two titles. That's the moment that put Miami Heat on the map. I really appreciate, man, you've been so gracious with your time. I got a couple more, like, couple fun ones that I want to throw at you before I let you go, all right? So that team, right? That team. Mentioned Gary Payton's on that team. You got Shaq, you got Zoe, Jay Will, you, Antoine Walker. GP's legendary for his talk. We know Shaq can talk. We know Zoe can talk. Who was the guy on that team that talked the most, that had the best trash talk game? I mean, GP is legendary. Like, everybody says he's the best, so I might be him. But who was the guy on that team that you're like, God, this dude, he just crushes people?
I'm going to say GP because he talks loud. And it's just like, yo, man, like, yo, just shut up sometimes or whatever. But, I mean, it's not even shut up. It's just, yo, why you talking so loud, G? And he's just into it, you know what I'm saying? I mean, just sitting around those guys, they always talking about, you know, who got the best of who, you know what I'm saying, between Shaq, you know, Zoe and GP. So it was just funny to hear that. And like I said, with GP, he's just going to out-talk everybody because he's so loud. And, you know, who has that energy just to keep loud talking, like, for 30 minutes? Like, it's crazy just sitting there, like, you know, before the games or in the locker room or on the bus. Like, nobody has that energy but GP. to talk like that. So even I would say he would win.
Even at that point in his career, like that was towards the end of his career, man. He wasn't even starting, right? Like that was late. Like he had to go to that team to get that title. Like that, and he's still talking like that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, because I mean, he's talking about when, I mean, his prime, his years before Miami, like, you know, he's actually talking. And like I said, with that, he's talking loud. It's like, yo, so it was funny. So, I mean, even in that short time, you know, that's GP being GP.
Now, in terms of personality, not just talking, but like big personalities, you played with, I would argue, probably the two biggest personalities or two of the biggest personalities ever in the NBA, Shaq and KG. Which of those guys, when you compare those guys' personalities, who was like the bigger? I think KG maybe was he more intense, and Shaq was a little more, I don't know. Shaq was probably intense as a player too. Like, how do you compare those guys as personalities, not as players?
With Shaq, you know, he has that great sense of humor. And so he always finds a way to show it. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, and when I say, like, he was actually nice to the other teams, because if he really wanted to be that force, he could really have hurt people. You know what I'm saying? Just hurt people. So, I mean, he wasn't a gentle, he was a gentle giant, but at the same time, you know, he made his presence felt, but he also had the balance of the sense of humor to keep the locker room and his teammates, you know, laughing and keep everything light. KG, he's so locked in all the time, and he has a great competitive, like, nature. Like, everything's competitive. And you talk about basketball, like, it's funny because you only see KG before the games on TV, banging his head, you know, on the basketball pad. And then, you know, he's beating his chest like this. But that guy right there, that's how you get ready for practice. That's like, no, seriously, that's how you get ready for practice. And that's why in Boston, we had some of the best practices, and he raised the level for everybody's practice habits in Miami. I mean, he was there early and there late, but that's how he got ready for practice, the same way he got ready for games and some, and this is for practice. And you talk about probably an hour to 45 minutes of practice, and that's how intense he is, and it's all about business. And then maybe on the plane ride here and there, you know what I'm saying, you know, he relaxes a little bit, have fun, but as soon as it touched down to the city or game day, whatever it may be, it's all business.
Are you surprised?
So I had the best of both worlds.
Yeah, are you surprised at how good of an actor he is now?
Hey, he's taking advantage of that opportunity, and so in most of those cases, that's him being himself too. Even from his look at how he talked, like you could tell then, like he's bubbling right now. Just he's focused and locked in, and it's about business. Like, you know, it's just that presence that he has.
It's amazing. So you probably get this question a lot, or you probably have gotten it a lot. If you don't want to answer it, it's cool, because you don't want to offend one team or the other. But who wins in an NBA Finals series, the 06 Heat or the 08 Celtics?
We still playing. And I just say that because, like, we're both competitive. Like, I mean, you can't give us a number.
You can only get seven games. We only get seven games.
We just, no. We just going to keep running the bat. I mean, I know that's probably a cop-out, but I just believe in both teams. We're just so competitive, and that will to win. And I know, you know, you talk about the seven-game series, but we'd just be a deadlock, you know what I'm saying? Because I just know, like I said, that just that competitive juice from those two teams, man, that was real. And, you know, the care for each other, our teammates. So we just, I don't know, we just still be playing, I guess.
Yeah, okay, I get it. Because
you'll pick up the physicality of it, then next thing you know, the NBA just like, yo, you know what I'm saying, y'all can't even play no more. Like, we had to take a break or something, you know what I'm saying? But it was, I mean, both teams, you know, were special and similar in the sense of just the competitive spirit. And then you talk about the talent, you know what I'm saying? We would have matched up well on both ends, how I look at it. And you go from the starting five to the bench players, I think, you know, across the board, both teams will pose problems for each other. But for me, I'm going to say we end up still as a tie.
All right, well, then this one, I mean, this one might be tough too, because now we're talking individuals. So I was just looking, I look back through your whole career. You've had the opportunity to play with, by my count, at least 10 first ballot Hall of Famers, right? because you played in Houston with Yao. Pau Gasol was on those Grizzly teams. Shaq and D-Wade, KG, Paul Pierce, Round. You played with CP3. GP was on that Heat team. Zoe. Yeah. If you had to pick a starting five of your former teammates, could you do it? Or if you want, I'll do mine of your former teammates first, and then you tell me what you think.
All right.
I'm going to go CP at the one, D-Wade at the two. I guess just based off positions, you got to go with Paul Pierce at the three, and then KG and Shaq.
I like it. I mean,
it's hard to go wrong.
It's hard to go wrong. But some of them, I mean, like you said, position wise, I mean, that's for the position that you need to fill. Mm-hmm. They just fall in those slots. I mean, but then, you know, you still, you know, you leave out some people. Maybe, you know, you have a strong bench as well. So they can't be too disappointed. But that was your list. And I like it and I agree with it. And I'll leave it at that.
Oh, yeah. Well, because even on the bench, you played with, the crazy thing is earlier in your career, you had Heat legends on your early teams. And you played with Timmy, you played with Glenn Rice. LeSean Leonard, like you had some of the old school Heat players, man. You could put some of them on your bench to get some shooting. That team's winning.
I've been blessed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, last one. It's the toughest question I think recently, but it doesn't have to do with any of your teams or your teammates, so you can answer this one. All right, and maybe unless you don't want to get into it, because some people don't like to. Okay. I heard you talk about when MJ got buckets on you, you didn't mind because it's MJ, right? Like, it's like, all right, I'm guarding it. It's okay. MJ can get buckets on me, right? You coach LeBron. You won a title with LeBron. Do you get into the GOAT conversation? Are there other people in that conversation for you, or is it just them two?
Sometimes I entertain the conversation, and I look at it where, as far as myself growing up, it was MJ. I used to wake up every Saturday morning, pop in my VHS cassette tape of Come Fly With Me, and I would watch that before I went outside to play. And so it was MJ, and you know, that's all I knew. And then you see his competitive nature, you see him winning. You know, at the highest level and consistently winning, and you know, he's 6-0, you know, on the biggest stage. Like, to me, that's impressive. That's impressive. And just like I say, even different eras, you know, the game has changed a lot. So he dominated his era, and like I say, even, you know, saying to get to the finals, like, he went through some Hall of Famers as well. You know what I'm saying? And so he, like, you couldn't get past the Bulls. So he was a big reason for that. And he had two separate three-peats with the same franchise. And to me, that's impressive. And you talk about the changing of times in the game itself, where LeBron James, you know, as a player playing against him, it's just competitive, you know, try to shut him down or whatever, you know, try to shut him down and you just want to beat him as a player. But to actually coach him, to see his preparation for the game, to be around his basketball IQ, and you know how he makes a team better, and the load that he carries on his shoulder, that's impressive too, doing it a different way. You know, and his ability, like, now, I mean, you say Miami, the Cavs, and the Lakers. I mean, to do it in different, you know, franchises, that speaks volumes and is special in itself. So those two are my all-time, you know, greats. And I, like I said, I just look at them from a different view of what's, you know, what's impressive to me and what I like. It's all impressive, but like I said, I still like being 6-0 in the finals. So I guess, you know, just as far as that, you know, I say MJ, but I also like how LeBron James plays the game. You know, he does it, you know what I'm saying, across the board. And, you know, people don't, you know, like his, you know, his not having a killer instinct, but he manages and plays a game, a well-rounded game, I say that. And that's very impressive, too, where, you know, you just can't say he's a scorer. He does everything, and he makes those other players, rise to the occasion as well. So, you know, I'm in love with both of them, you know, their game and what they brought to the game. And like I said, it was just, I mean, as far as MJ, I grew up on him. So the next player, like I said, the next player is LeBron James because of how he played the game. And he made it cool to do the things that he's doing.
If he wins two more, does 6-0 matter anymore if he gets six titles?
If he wins two more, I'm happy for him. But for me, like I said, 6-0, gotcha. I just like how that sounds. You know,
it sounds pretty good.
If you get there, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just, I mean, like I said, I'd rather get there and be undefeated than, I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah. All right. I hear you. Hey,
he wins two more. You know, now he has six as well. So, I mean, I'm sure it'll be an argument, a debate. But like I said, I mean, as long as you get them, you have an opportunity to get them. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
Like I said, it's something special when you do it. And like I said, for him to do it for the franchises that he have, you know what I'm saying? You start out on the East and then you go to the West and win it with another story franchise in the Lakers. That's big.
Yeah, absolutely. James Posey, thank you so much, man. Heat legend. First off-season episode of Believe in Miami Heat. Follow him at James_Posey41, right, on Twitter. And then go ahead and listen to the podcast because it's great, man. I love it. I've listened to just about every episode so far. It's really good stuff. James, I appreciate you coming on and being so gracious with your time with us. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Unbelievable. James Posey, what an interview. Generous with his time, Heat legend, NBA champion. That was really fun. Pat Riley stories, D Wade stories, Shaq stories. That dude played all over the league, and he's incredible. Make sure, guys, go check out his podcast, Posecast. No, I'm not kidding. There's a ton of NBA podcasts out there, but his conversations are great. They're fun. He takes a different angle on it a little bit from what the typical podcast does. So go ahead, check it out. I told you we were going to have some big guests. I told you this thing was just getting started. Get ready next week. Another big guest coming on, Heat Nation. You're going to love it. And don't forget, as always,
Heat Nation. I love you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.